Right, you get the recording going and then, oh, we're going? All right. I'll now call to order this online public meeting. It is March 3rd, 2021. My name is Sean Dennison and I'm the chair of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission. You should be able to see tonight's agenda on your screen. If you can't see the screen or have joined by phone only, I'll be announcing the agenda items as we move through the main topics. Due to COVID-19, regular meetings and public hearings of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission are being held in a virtual meeting room. This will allow for safe participation by commission members, staff, and any citizens interested in attending. Members of the public and applicants have joined as an attendee, which means you can see and hear the event if you joined via computer or mobile device, or you can just hear the event if you've joined by phone. Other event participants cannot see your video and cannot hear your audio unless you are acknowledged by the commission chair or staff and are unmuted. This evening's agenda is planned as followed: roll call and introductions, meeting notes approval, public comment, a public hearing on the certificate of appropriateness for an application for proposed weather station and fence enclosure at the Clark County Poor Farm Historic Site, a heritage overlay review of facade improvements for 812 Main Street, committee updates and announcements, old business, new business, and adjournment. We'll now start with a roll call of HPC members who are present for this meeting. Commission members, please say "I'm here" after I call your name. We know already that Julie is sick and will not be joining us this evening. Greg?
I'm here.
Ellie?
I'm here.
Andy?
Here.
Michelle?
Here.
Don?
Here.
And of course, Sean is here as well. So for meeting, our next item is meeting notes approval. Does anyone have any comments on the draft meeting notes? Hopefully, if you did, you already sent them in, but this is your last chance.
This is Don. I move approval as submitted.
Seconded,
Do we have a second?
Andy. Andy seconds.
All right, it's moved and seconded. I think we're going to try just a voice vote and see how that goes. All in favor, say yes or aye.
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 Opposed? All right, Jackie, it passes unanimously with our one missing commissioner. Our next item is public comment. We'll now take public comment on any items besides the hearing and heritage overlay review. Please keep remarks brief and to the point. You'll have 3 minutes to speak. Jackie, do we have any members of the public online?
We do, we do. Let
All
me
right.
pull up my slide here. Okay. For attendees using their computer or WebEx application, if you would like to speak, utilize the raised hand icon. You can do this by clicking the participant button or icon, the location of which depends on the device you're using. We'll acknowledge those that have raised their hand, and when you are acknowledged, you will be unmuted. For those that are joining us via phone, you need to press star 3 on your phone's number panel to raise your hand. You'll hear a message that lets you know that you have raised your hand, and when we acknowledge you will be unmuted, and you will hear a message that says you have been unmuted. When you have finished your comment, press star 3 again to lower your hand. And also for those that are using your computer or internet, if you could remember to lower your hand after you've made your public comment, we appreciate that.
All right, so if anyone, any members of the public would like to make comments at this time, go ahead and raise your hand. Give people a moment. All right, seeing no hands, this concludes the general public comment portion of this meeting. We will move on to our next item, which is a certificate of appropriateness for the Clark County Poor Farm, also known as the 78th Street Heritage Farm. The public hearing, I will now open this online public hearing for the certificate of appropriateness application for the Clark County Poor Farm for a proposed weather station and fence enclosure. The steps involved in the hearing process are shown on the slide. Jackie, can we put those on the flag?
Yeah, sorry. I'm getting there. Here we go. You're faster than me.
So while Jackie's doing that, do any of the commission members have any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest?
No.
All right. So our agenda for the public hearing is that it is opened, which we just did. And the commission members announce that any conflicts of interest, which we just did. Next, we'll have a staff report, then questions of staff by the commission, a presentation by the applicant, any questions from the commission of the applicant, an opportunity for public comment on this issue. And then the public hearing is closed. The commission will deliberate and the commission will make a motion and roll call vote. So Jackie, please give us your staff report.
Okay. Okay, so this is case HST 2021-00001, certificate of appropriateness application for a new weather station and perimeter fence at the historic Clark County Poor Farm, otherwise also known as the 78th Street Heritage Farm. The property is located at 1919 Northeast 78th Street in Vancouver. The applicant, Ag WeatherNet, from WSU, on behalf of the owners, Clark County, have applied for a certificate of appropriateness to upgrade the existing weather station located at the site. The proposal is to remove the existing 10-foot mast and construct a 33-foot tower in its place within a 32-foot by 32-foot area. The tower will be anchored by three guy lines and cemented in place at its base. The proposal also includes the construction of a 4-foot tall fence, either cattle panel style or wire mesh. The applicant has stated that the fence is not essential, but provides a boundary to protect the data and the equipment. The existing station was installed in 2008, the one that's being replaced. Oops. Come on. There. Okay. Background. The County Poor Farm and Cemetery is a historic resource located at the 78th Street Heritage Farm, formerly occupied by Washington State University. It was listed in the Washington Heritage Register in October of 2012, listed in January of 2013 to the National Register as a historic district, and listed in September of 2013 in the Clark County Heritage Register. The property dates back to 1871 when a local resident who owned the original donation land claim settled a $400 county judgment by deeding the county 100 acres of land. This property became the Poor Farm and a building was erected to house the poor. By 1873, Clark County began operating the farm on the property to help address the physical needs of the poor, homeless, elderly, and mildly handicapped men and women. Poor farm residents grew crops, maintained orchards, and raised livestock until the 1940s. To the extent their health would allow, residents were expected to provide field and housekeeping labor and provide care for other residents. Rules were strict and accommodations minimal. Some of the farm products grown on site were passed on to the county-funded hospital, and some were sold. The property is locally significant with social welfare and early 20th century poor farm relief programs. Counties operated poor farms throughout the United States until the system was reorganized in the 30s and then largely discontinued following the Roosevelt administration's passage and implementation of Social Security legislation. The county operated the poor farm on the site as early as 1873 until 1943. In addition, the property is locally significant with mid-20th century state-operated agricultural extension centers implemented to aid individual counties with agricultural research and development. Washington State College, now WSU, established the Southwestern Washington Experiment Station on the property to increase production of agricultural products to Clark County in Clark County by determining the adaptability of new crops and by developing improved varieties, cultural practices, and fertilization recommendations for the important agricultural soils of the region. In 2008, Clark County resumed ownership of the farm property after 59 years as the Agricultural Experiment Research Station run by WSU. In 2009, an extensive public outreach process developed a concept plan, which served as the foundation for the development of a master plan for the site, which was updated in March of 2020. The plan envisions an agricultural, educational, and recreational community asset that reflects the site's history and provides a healthy, sustainable environment for future generations. So the slide here provides the code language for the commission's responsibility for reviewing these types of cases. And here are some photos that the applicant provided. This one is of the existing weather station that will be replaced. A general diagram of the meteorological towers, as all part of your the staff report and application packet. Fence layout. The guy anchor layout. A example from Mount Vernon that shows the cattle panel fencing. Another example of another location that shows a wire mesh option fencing. Here is a site plan showing the in red there, the current location of the weather station, and the yellow square indicates where the proposed new location of the new tower and fence will be. Here's a photo showing the existing gear, and then in what they're calling an antique weather station, which John might be able to talk a little bit more about. And now for the review criteria, all I included on these slides were those that were applicable. So on the staff report, you'll see all 10 criteria from the Secretary of Interior Standards for Rehabilitation. So number one, every reasonable effort shall be made to provide a compatible use for a property which requires minimal alteration of the building, structure, or site in its environment, or to use a property for its originally intended purposes. Staff's findings is that the proposed weather station and fence as located does not impact or alter any of the contributing buildings or the historic cemetery. The existing weather station is currently located at the site very near to the proposed location, although shorter than the one proposed and without a fence. In addition, the proposed tower and fencing are not permanent structures and can be removed if ever necessary. Number two, the distinguishing original qualities or character of a building, structure, or site in its environment shall not be destroyed. The removal or alteration of any historic material or distinctive architectural features should be avoided when possible. The staff findings are the proposal does not alter any historic material or distinctive architectural features of any of the structures at the site. As stated before, the proposed tower and fence are not permanent structures and are not impacting significant features. The next is criteria 8. Every reasonable effort shall be made to protect and preserve archaeological resources affected by or adjacent to any project. Staff's findings, to staff's knowledge, the proposal should not affect any archaeological resources. If an inadvertent discovery is found, it is recommended that work cease and the applicant contact the Washington Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation for guidance. The last one is number 10. Wherever possible, new additions or alterations to structures shall be done in such a manner that if such additions or alterations were to be removed in the future, the essential form and integrity of the structure would be unimpaired. Staff's findings, the proposed weather station tower and fence are not attached to any structure, nor are they permanent and could be removed in the future if deemed necessary. Staff recommendation is that the proposal meets the applicable criteria as stated in the staff report. That is my staff report. I'm happy to answer any questions from the commission.
Jackie?
Yes.
Ideally, how long is the new weather station supposed to sustain without maintenance?
That's probably going to be a good question for the applicant, for John. So he's coming right behind me, so I'm sure he can answer that one. Anyone else for me?
I have one, Jackie. I imagine the Poor Farm has done enough digging on this site that they probably have like an archaeological discovery plan basically on file. Is that the case?
I mean, there has been a lot done there. It's the farm, right? It's not near the cemetery. And from previous staff reports that we've done for like there was some signage that we put out the farm. This was the recommended approach for our findings for the applicant.
Okay. Hearing no more questions, we'll move on. If the applicant would like to make a presentation or some comments.
I do have a presentation. Hopefully not too long. Thanks, Jackie, for all that info. And I had no idea what I was going to be getting myself into here. So I was going to present is mostly a duplicate. but I can kind of go over what I've got here and maybe broaden some of the information. Is there a way that I can share my screen?
Give me one second. Okay, see if you can now.
Still have a gray button here.
Let's see. Okay, hold on.
Oh, there it goes. So as she already mentioned, we'd like to upgrade the weather station at the Heritage Farm. Here's another angle of the current site as it currently stands. If you're not familiar with Ag WeatherNet, we're part of WSU. We operate the state weather network. And we have about 190 stations across the state. All of our stations, they update every 15 minutes, and all of the data is publicly available via our website, which is weather.wsu.edu. We're currently in the process of upgrading some of our existing sites and expanding into some underserved areas of the state. My responsibility as part of the network is to maintain and take care, and I'm working on upgrading, expanding all the western parts of the state. So part of my job is to try to establish sites where that we can upgrade at or find new sites where that we can construct new towers at. Overall, kind of what I've got lined up here is about 30 to 35 sites across Western Washington. And I would like to upgrade the Vancouver site as part of this. So again, the current site at Vancouver Heritage Farm, we've already seen the proposed upgrade, the outline for the tower, where all the sensors will go, kind of a repeat of the diagrams. Skip over some of this. Here's the close-up of the Tumwater Tower, which we installed in October 2020. Again, the Mount Vernon Tower. I also wanted to talk just briefly about what we plan on upgrading. So why do we want to do this? So there's been a lot of improvements in sensing technologies. One thing that we want to change is we're going to add aspiration to the air temperature probe. This will provide for an elimination of a 1 to 2 degree bias that can form on extremely hot days in the summer. The need to get rid of that bias is extremely high as growing degree days actually depend on high temperature. And as their accumulative temperature an error of 1 to 2 degrees over a couple of months can result in an error that's up to 100 degrees. And that could significantly impact the timeline at which growers perform certain operations. We're also planning to install an air temperature sensor at 9 meters, also aspirated. This will allow us to obtain inversion conditions as well as canopy level temperatures. We'll be putting in a 10 meter wind monitor. 10 meters is the world standard height for wind monitoring. So we want to bring our weather stations into alignment with those standards. We're putting in second rain gauges at these stations in the event that the primary gauge becomes clogged or fails for some reason. We want to make sure that the record continues and we get every tip that falls. We'll also be adding a windscreen to the rain gauges that'll improve the accuracy of the rainfall measurements. We'll also be adding a 5 centimeter soil sensor. And also be adding functionality to measure soil water potential to the 5 centimeter and the 20 centimeter soil probes. So it's a pretty substantial upgrade. Someone suggested what might help is to kind of visualize what a tower might actually look like out here. So I apologize for my crude Photoshop skills, but I did try to finagle something together here just so it might help to visualize what it might look like. So this is a photo of the site as it currently stands, and this is what I imagine it might look like if it were to be built, if that helps at all. As I said, a little bit crude job there, and as was pointed out, the fence is entirely optional. If that kind of becomes a sticking point, we can do without it. I also kind of want that some of the data that we've been gaining from the station for the last 12 years, because that's sort of what this project is all about, really. It's the history of Vancouver in data form. So this is a plot of air temperature as averaged over the past 12 years, every single day. So what you're seeing in the green shading here is at the top of the green is where our normal high temperatures are. The bottom of the green shaded area is where our normal lows are for Vancouver. The top of the red shading are where the maximum temperatures that we have observed for that specific day have fallen. So you can see that the max air temperature that we have observed in Vancouver is about 104 degrees that occurred late July, I think 2009. The blue is the opposite. It's the coldest temperatures we've measured on those days over the last 12 years. The coldest temperature I think was around 4 degrees and it fell about mid-January there. On the plot, we also have the daily highs and lows from 2021 plotted as well in the red line and the blue line there. And you know, every day that passes, we're continuing to add more and more data to this. We're building on the history of Vancouver. One of the things I particularly like about watching those lines build out is it's very easy for me to distinguish where the records have fallen. So you can kind of see in the red line here in mid-January, we actually had a couple of days where we set records at our station, followed by, I think, at least one day there in late January where we set a record low. And just, you know, the more time that this station can stay there, the greater the data set will be. As we found out earlier, the station has actually been located there for since 1895. It was originally moved from Fort Vancouver at that time, and was the responsibility for the station was handed off to WSU about 55 years ago. And Ag WeatherNet took over responsibilities in 2008. I've been taking care of weather stations here for about 10 years now, and I've worked in a couple in three different states on a bunch of different weather stations, and I've never come across any station that's been in the field more than like 30 years. So hearing that a station's been somewhere for 100 years is pretty shocking to me. We kind of do the same thing with precipitation here. The green shaded area is the cumulative rainfall average over the last 12 years throughout the year. And in Washington, the rainy season generally lasts from November through March or April. So we get a steady increase over those months and typically dries out in the summer months. You get a nice flat line kind of in the summer months there. And then we plot the 2021 accumulation over that, and we can easily tell if there's a surplus or if we're in a drought condition. It appears that at this point we are in about a 3-inch surplus for Vancouver. So I think that's kind of the end of the presentation. How do I stop sharing this? There we go. Just to kind of summarize things, to bring it all together. This Heritage Farm has been the location of Vancouver's weather station for many years. The history has been recorded every day through the weather monitoring. We want the history to be as accurate as possible. And that means from time to time that upgrade of the equipment is essential so that the data quality is at its best. And that's kind of all I've got to share.
Thank you, John. Are there any questions for the applicant from the commissioners?
Team, I forgot how to raise my hand.
Just go ahead.
Okay. John. I just wanted to ask, I'm not sure if you mentioned, what's going to happen to the existing weather station? Does it gets torn down, right?
Yeah, once the new tower is built, we will remove the old station.
Okay, are any of those materials recyclable?
A lot of it's going to get reused for research projects. We recycle the batteries that come out of there. We will reuse the data loggers for research projects. Sometimes we have students doing things in the field and in various locations throughout the state. That pole that's going to come out of there, we're going to reuse that. We actually have been cutting those things down to size to mount our solar panels on. I've got a big pile of steel in my storage unit right now, and I've just been picking it over.
I just had one other question. How long is the new weather station supposed to sustain without any kind of maintenance?
So part of our federal contract is that we maintain these stations at least 3 times per year. So we make regular visits to the site to perform maintenance in the spring, the summer, and the fall. If a sensor should fail or a battery should fail or, failing breaks on the station, we may make an emergency visit to replace that sensor. Usually we try to group that in with other visits to other stations so that, all the driving can get a little bit wearing on you just to drive down to a single location to do one small fix.
Thank you, sir.
John, I have just a couple of questions. So the mounting for the tower itself is just a concrete footing?
Yeah, the mounting for the base plate is a concrete footing. Yeah, it's concreted into the ground. We excavate a small hole. It's about a 15 by 15 by 15 foot area. 15 by 15 by 15 inch area, not foot. our base plate's about 15 inches as well. And The tower is stabilized by the three guy lines that are anchored into the ground. And the anchors are just, they screw in, they screw out.
And then the fence options that you showed, I mean, those look like just pound in stakes. Is that all they are?
It's just T posts and either the mesh wire or the cattle panels.
All right. Thank you. Do any of the other commissioners have any questions?
I just have a question. This may be more for Jackie than for John. You said that there's a recently approved concept plan for the area. Is there any concern at all that what is being proposed would be inconsistent in any way with concept plan?
Good question. Actually, this came as a kind of a pass, not referral, but from the Heritage Farm Advisory Board, who are in charge of managing that plan. So when new proposals and ideas for things, the activities or signs or things that are going to happen at the farm, they have to go through that advisory board to okay it. So they look against the master plan to make sure that abides by those goals and visions of that. So to my knowledge, that they are they're okay with this, but I'm not sure if it's gone through their approval process yet. I think they wanted first to come before you.
Okay, and then just a question for John. Is there any lighting proposed in conjunction with the tower or the facility or the perimeter?
No, there's no lighting with the tower. One of the things we need absolute dark at night for our solar radiation sensors. If there were light on the tower, it might cause biases in that sensor.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, we will move on to, I believe, public comment is next. So Jackie, I'll let you give the directions again.
Yes, okay, let me get my information. So for attendees that are using their computer or WebEx and you'd like to speak or make comment, please utilize the raised hand button or icon. Sometimes it's hard to see. It's very small at the bottom and it may not be there unless you click on the participant button or icon. So once you raise your hand, we will go down the line and acknowledge you. And when you're acknowledged, you'll be unmuted. For those using the telephone, you need to press *3 on your phone's number panel to raise your hand. You'll hear a message that lets you know you did so. And then when it's your turn and I unmute you, you'll hear a message that says you have been unmuted. And for both internet computer users and telephone, if you could remember to lower your hand. So click on the button if you're using your computer, or *3 if you're on your phone. Okay.
All right. And I would like to remind the public that if you wish to retain the ability to be a party of record on this matter, or to challenge or defend any decision made on this matter, please state and spell your name and provide your mailing address or email address for the record when you make your comment. So we will wait to see if we get any hands.
Now, I see one member, or not a member, but someone that might have interest. Jerry, did you want to say something regarding this? If you do, hit the hand icon. Oh, that might be him. Okay, I want to start with our call-in user 4. I want to go ahead and unmute you.
Are you trying to get old Jerry?
Yeah, is this Jerry?
That's Jerry. I had a little technical difficulties, but I'm on the phone for sure. I'm watching pictures. I don't know if you can see me or not, but I might be in 2 or 3 places. So I am, I work for the National Weather Service. I have a co-op weather station right on site there. That's that old antiquated little white box that's sitting there. That's been around. It's probably been there since the mid 1800s or a variation of it in different forms. And probably the workers there do daily weather observations for us. That instrument will stay because it's a little different database. And so that's there. But I'm really impressed with the system that John's got there. I wish I had a couple of those things, actually.
Thanks, Jerry.
Another thing I could really talk about is the historical nature of this stuff. Talking about the weather being there at the site since 1895, that's like unheard of. 35 years, the site is pristine. It's basically unchanged in over 100 years, and you can really see trends. Just in the last 12 years, you saw the wonderful trends that they had with the existing equipment. And if you can imagine that done over the last 100 years or 200, well, 100 years anyway, that would be priceless information for how the environment is changing over the centuries, really. That's all I have.
Okay, anyone else have any questions? And if Jerry, you could, if you could hit your star 3 to lower your hand, that would be appreciated. Any other members of the public? Star 3 if you're calling in, or the hand icon. I'm not seeing any more, Sean.
All right. So now the staff, Jackie, you may respond to any testimony from the applicant or the public, if you have any.
Nope, none from me.
All right, then the public hearing is now closed and the commission will deliberate. The commission must make findings that either agree with the staff's finding on each criteria or make specific comments on any finding. And so we will now start with commission deliberation. Do any of the commissioners have any comments?
This is Don. I support the staff's findings.
I would just like to emphasize two things. You know, one is the way that updating this weather station is actually very much in tune with the historic use of this site. Considering that we have this even longer history of weather recording than I thought we did. I thought it was, you know, a few decades, but it's actually quite a bit longer than that. And then just that the alteration that we're talking about has, because everything's so thin, it has minimum visual impact, and it appears to be fully reversible. So I think I also support the staff findings and would support its approval. Any of the other commissioners have any comments? Hearing none, I will now accept a motion, including, so when you make a motion, make sure you include your findings. Agree with the staff report is fine, and make sure you include your name when you make your motion.
It's Michelle. So I would make a motion that the commission agrees with the staff findings and that we approve the certificate of appropriateness for the weather station.
Seconded. Mandy.
All right. Do we need any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and take the vote as roll call since this is a hearing. Once again, Julie is sick and she is excused. Greg?
Yes.
Yeah.
Belly?
Yes.
Andy?
Yes.
Michelle?
Yes. Yes.
Don?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. Jackie, the vote in favor is unanimous.
Thank you.
John, thank you for coming to present to us and giving such a informative presentation. We appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
All right, our next item is Heritage Overlay Review of 812 Main Street. There'll be a staff presentation. Just to remind the commission, our role on these projects is advisory to the staff as they make their decision. So, Mark, you're up.
Thank you, Chair, commission members. Jackie, I see Greg McGreevy is in the attendees list. He is from Hurley. If we could move him over to a participant, that might help out.
There he is.
In this discussion, great, thank you. So commissioners, this is 812 Main Street, also known as the Spanky's Building in downtown Vancouver. It's been, well, maybe last summer now. Like you, Chair Denniston, time is moving differently. We received this application last summer. Property is not listed on the local, state, or national register, but is within Vancouver's Heritage Overlay District Number 2. The HPC reviewed a design for this building at the August 3rd, 2020 meeting. And since that time, the applicant has provided an updated design and information to address the commission's questions and comments from that meeting. My memo otherwise here stays basically the same. I updated it a little bit based on the new design. So as part of the package you should have received, we have an updated narrative addressing the overlay district number 2, a letter from Stonewood Structural Engineers addressing the unreinforced masonry, a letter from LSW Architects Casey Wyckoff, elevations, and then updated renderings. And then, as I mentioned at the beginning, we do have Greg McGreevy from Hurley here as well. So with that, I am open to any commission questions.
Any of the commissioners have any questions for Mark? I have just one for you, Mark. Since the previous images aren't available on the website right now, I'm going by memory. So can you describe for us the differences between what we saw before and what we're seeing now in terms of the design?
I can try to my untrained eye. I can also, Jackie, if it is a possibility, I didn't even know we had that option. Do you want to try to send me control? Okay. And I might be able to pull. I do have the old, the previous, I should say. Renderings up. I see I'm the presenter now. Let's see. Let me just navigate to. Okay. Now, share. Screen, but that's the new one. Oh, sorry, this is the previous one. I got confused. Okay, so here is what, am I on? Are we seeing it?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Let me zoom in here a little bit. From my eye, the signage has been removed here, this big block, and then also the top canopy has been drawn back. It's a lot shallower. And this lower canopy is now between the storefront and I believe these are transom windows. So those are some of the main elements that I noticed in my review. You can always see this upper fascia is not even really a canopy anymore, and then the lower canopy is moved down, and the big sign is no longer there. So those are the big ones. I think the applicant could probably speak in more eloquent detail about the specifics. But that's what I noticed.
Do any of the other commissioners have any questions for Mark? Hearing none, we'll give the applicant an opportunity to make any remarks or presentation.
Thank you. I know you all have seen this project before, and the intent here was to take the input from the commission last time and work with city staff and relook at the design in terms of some of the key features. And try and also provide, you know, background against the historic overlay code here. And so Mark was right. What we did is really kind of recognize that sign band as being kind of out of place in the district, pulled that out, drew back those horizontal elements to really just kind of create an element that tied into the adjacent building, and also referenced the horizontal element that existed on the original brick structure, and then placed a more standard metal canopy down near the sidewalk height that's aligned with the rest of the adjacent buildings. One thing we continue to not see on this building is the brick, and I know that there was a lot of comments about that before. The unfortunate reality, which I think is demonstrated by Stonewood's input as well as the engineers on the prior submission, which was a few couple years ago on this, is that you know, late 1800s building is essentially gone. A lot of that brickwork was either completely removed, infilled, damaged, cut back to provide for the mid-century modern kind of redesign that Day Hilborn did. And one of the challenges is that we can't even really attach a brick facade to the existing structure without functionally creating a standalone wall there and still meet seismic codes. And so while that's the unfortunate reality, the fortunate one is that we do have a mid-century design that is important in its own right. That was one of the early ones that Day did in town in a more modern design. We can keep most of that stucco material while adding some, again, some features that call back to that original building, such as horizontal elements, creating a bit more of a cornice there. The blocks of three windows, which were really evident on that 9th Street side of the original structure, and call kind of a little bit of homage to that while still sticking with a modern design that's sleek and gives those lines that was really established in 1948. So that's the building that we're left with. Actually, today it looks much more dilapidated. And so having done a number of these redesigns in the district, both the two buildings next door, the Sparks Furniture Building, Copeland's was nearby. You know, we have a keenness to maintain the character of Main Street and really make it vibrant. And so we felt like this was a good way to draw this back, to tie it into the adjacent buildings with the materials, to really anchor the opposite corner from the Quinn, which is newly completed, and fit the character of that. And while really focusing on that mid-century design, which is achievable and again is important in the historical context of Vancouver architecture in and of itself. And so really trying to efficiently take advantage of reviving this building that's been on its last legs for quite some time.
Can I ask a question? This is Michelle.
Of course.
So you talked about in your presentation about, or in the document about signage, and it sounds like it's still a little bit up in the air where your signage might go. So can you give us some ideas of what you're thinking about future signage? And it's
yeah, I think future signage would be attached to the building, kind of per the overlay intent. It would be up to submission of a signed permit for its exact location. You know, for me, I would probably align it above the windows, either on Main or on Ninth, horizontally, or you could also do a vertical sign in the corner. So, but something that was much more subtle and tied back to kind of those 1940s signs that were attached to the side of the building would be the intent there. But most likely in that black wood, that black material you see is actually natural wood. And it, so it would be in that kind of field is where you would most likely see the sign land.
Yeah. Jackie, could we have another look at the building prior to modification, please? Thank you.
Do any of the other commissioners have any questions for the tenant? For the, I'm seeing tenant and reading it, for the applicant?
I do, this is Feli. Were these designs constructed with an ideal tenant in mind? Because I know that originally, prior to this design, the lower part was going to be isolated from the upper part, correct? These are two different businesses.
It's still the intent to provide that option where you can demise the space and you'd have an entry in the corner of Ninth and Main there where the existing entry is, and then a second entry where there is one already, a door there on Ninth Street. And so there's an existing stair in the back to access the second floor. And so part of the design, the structural requirements is we actually have to put in a CMU wall on the inside of the building to shore up that Main Street facade, which it doesn't have any of the shear requirement that it needs right now. And so that will also frame in an exit stair from the second floor. So the hope would be to have a restaurant use in the bottom floor. It's really well set up for that. One of the things we love about the building, and one of the reasons we really want to try and keep the existing structure, is because we do have exposed brick that we can keep on the inside and really capture some of that look inside of the space, which plays very, very nicely for a restaurant there and also fits in with the other uses that are in that vicinity. So whether or not ultimately a tenant does that, you have to have the tenant, and so there could be a lot of different uses in the space. But our original objective was retail and or restaurant on the main floor, and then an office use likely on the second floor.
Okay. All right, thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. I have one question. We see in the reports there was some exploration of restoring the building in its 1900s era. Was there any exploration of restoring the De Heilborn design?
Not into its exact, like bring it back to that exact design. We didn't really look at that. We really wanted to add in a few other elements into the design that still kind of honored the shape and the lines, but provided a little bit more interest on the building itself.
Thanks. Do any of the other commissioners have any questions?
This is Michelle. Can we go back to that? I'm going to tag team on your question, Sean, about the Day Hilborn design. So it seemed like when you talked earlier, you talked about how the windows are very reminiscent of the Day Hilborn design. There were some elements of his design that you incorporated into this, right? Because I can't quite remember all of what that 40s iteration was, 1940s.
Yeah, we do have a picture. If we go down in that document a little farther, that's the original building here. And you'll see in this original building, the three band windows on, that's 9th Street facade there. And if we go down a little farther, we can see the 1940s, which has really not windows here. These were added in, but it has the three blocks tying in. So then when they did a later remodel, they added the three windows in the space of those kind of blocked in areas there, and also kind of kept that horizontal line that goes around the top of the building there. Now, what we wanted to do is pull in those blocks of three windows, one to bring more light into the space upstairs, but also then have kind of that repeating pattern of three on the north side of the building. One of the things they did in the 40s there was they basically shaved off the whole front of that brick building and kind of flattened out all of those brick features that were there, which is what makes it very difficult to reclaim.
Thank you. Any other questions? Hearing none, we will give an opportunity for public comment.
Okay, I'm just going to go ahead so we can keep kind of this up in case someone needs to refer to it. I'm just going to verbally give the instructions. So for participants using their computer or WebEx application, if you would like to speak, please utilize the raised hand icon. If you can't see this, make sure you hit the participant button or icon and the hand should show up. When you're acknowledged, you'll be unmuted. And looks like we do not have any more callers, so I won't go into the telephone instructions. Would anyone like to make a comment on this overlay review?
This is Feli. I do feel that it is far more conducive than the last plan. I am much warmer to this one.
Feli, we're still doing public comment. We'll get to deliberation in just a moment. It's all right.
I don't see any hands, Sean, so I think you can probably move on.
All right, unless, Mark, you have an opportunity to respond to any of the applicant's comments, if you would like.
I don't have anything else to share, Chair.
All right. Then we will move into deliberation. So Feli opened it. Feli, did you want to add anything to your first comment? Michelle, I think you're muted.
Shoot. Okay. So, you know, I really appreciate the applicant going back and taking another look at this. I do appreciate this design a lot more than the one that we saw earlier. I have to say that I do wish that the things that had happened to this building in the 1940s and the 1950s hadn't happened. I wish that it still had that beautiful turn of the century design and brickwork and those wonderful curved windows, but that's what's happened and this is what we have to work with. And so I'm glad that big sign got off the side of the building. You know, that was a little bit overwhelming. And I just think, I feel like this is a much more tasteful design. than what we saw earlier. And I just, you know, it's not easy probably for an applicant to have a commission say, go back and try again. And I do really appreciate them making it. It seems like they made an honest run at this and really did try to work with some of the things that we said. And I also just recognize that, you know, as much as I love those turn of the century buildings, there, it does seem that you get to the point where you just, it's just not economically feasible, you know, to save them as much as you would want to.
I'll go.
Great.
I just want to second some of the comments made by my fellow commissioners about appreciating the effort that was made to fresh look at this. I also agree that I think it's a much better fit for the immediate area, and also incorporates a number of the comments that we made. Particularly appreciate the effort to try to keep some of the elements within, you know, the interior of the building, and utilize those hopefully in the future interior design of the space, because that way I think we can have the best of both worlds and have a beautiful new exterior facade, as well as features that will remind people of what the original building looked like when you walk inside. So I think definitely moving in the right direction. So thank you.
Do any of the other commissioners have any comments or discussion? Well, while you think, I have a few comments. So it's totally understandable that the, you know, early 1900s design can't be brought back, and the structural reports show that. I do really want to emphasize, though, that the Day Hillborn design is a local adaptation of the international style modernism. This is fully a postmodern style building. This is not a modernist building. I want to say it's a nice design. I mean, it was nice before. It's nice. It's still nice, and it respects its context more now. But this is a postmodern building, and it's really having a few throwbacks to historic elements and historic context. That's not preservation. You know, that might be useful design, but that's not preservation, and that's nowhere in our ordinance. Projects aren't required to do that. That's not part of our standards for evaluation. And so, since this is not a restoration of the Hillborn design, that means that the criteria for evaluation are pretty clearly laid out in the code. You know, it's 25.10.020, what, B3 or whatever it is, you know, where they're really clearly laid out. You know, it talks about what the windows need to look like. It talks about what, you know, a prominent cornice at the top of the building. So there's a whole list of design criteria for what the building needs to have to meet the criteria in the code. So it doesn't really matter what we like and whether we think it's more respectful of the context. It's, you know, opinions don't matter here. The only thing that matters is the code has criteria for approval, and Mark will ultimately make that decision. But when I look through A through I, this building doesn't meet many of those criteria for an alteration or what's effectively new construction here. And, you know, the fact that it's a nice building doesn't change that fact. And I think that that's what really needs to be the basis for approval when this goes through. Does it meet the criteria in the code? And I'm looking at it, and it really doesn't. As nice as it might be, it doesn't meet the criteria in the code. Do any of the other commissioners have any more comment or discussion? So now would be the time when we would make a motion. Oh, Jackie?
Michelle, you're muted there.
I'm sorry. I keep thinking I hit it and I hit it wrong. Sean, could you help me understand what should the building have to meet the code? Could you give me some examples so I can just kind of follow your thinking a little bit more? What should we be seeing in this building to specifically meet those elements of the code? Could you give me a few examples?
Sure. So criteria A, windows which are narrow and vertical emphasis, symmetrically spaced, generally with large panels, which we don't have. Generally of standard brick masonry. You have a reason why it couldn't be, but occasionally stone block, sometimes exposed and at times painted. I think there's a strong argument for using stucco. The D is one of the other big ones, a prominent upper cornice with occasional lower cornices, with occasional repetition of the upper cornice detail above bay windows and prominent windowsills or heavily recessed windows. We do have some recessed windows. There's clear articulation through between floors, which is H, and we don't see the signs. But I think that those two of the ones that really define kind of the major stylistic requirements of major alterations in new construction in the district, that cornice and the window configuration, we're not seeing here. Ultimately the city will need to make the decision, but when you read through the criteria, and I'll be honest, I was kind of disappointed to hear, the Hillborn design be called out, because I remembered and I went and looked back at the meeting minutes to make sure, but the applicant hadn't seen any images of the Hillborn design before coming up with this design. And it's basically the same as what we've seen before. So to talk about how this evokes the Hillborn design, I don't think is really accurate. It is a design which uses some of the openings that were already there. And, like I said, it's a good design, but it's fully postmodern. It has very little connection to the Hillborn design. So what we're looking at is not a restoration. It is an alteration. And the code has clear requirements for alterations.
Sean? Is there a picture available of the building as it stands today we can look at?
I mean, here's one from Maps Online of the Main Street side.
Yeah, we have so little of what was left of any stage of this building before.
I do feel, honestly, that's why I asked my question about designed with intent like a preference for a tenant, because as I argued before, I really love this building. It has a lot of, it was one of the only places I could shop as a kid. I remember walking in there and wanting to dance all around that bottom floor because it's huge. And then it was always fun to go that back way and go shopping. There were more clothes up there. I feel like if ultimately the intent in this design was to have a tenant that below was a restaurant, from this perspective, I could see the Spankies in that. I could see the restaurant. I do understand about the code and the architectural design. I get it. But if the upper level were retail or clothing, I would still have a feel for this building as the Spankies building that I see today. And depending on how they do the signage, depending on how they put their company name or whatever it is outside, I don't know. For me personally, I still feel it. I do. I feel like it's far more conducive to this building than the design prior, but that's just my personal opinion.
Okay.
So it's Michelle again. I'm thinking about what Sean's saying, you know, and Sean, you always bring up fabulous points, I think, to think about in our commission meeting. So I guess I have a question for Mark. I guess I would ask Mark, how do you, what would be your response as far as like how the windows are placed and the cornices? Could you speak to that at all for us and kind of help us other commission members?
Sure. I mean, I haven't had this design for too long, so we still need to go through those criteria. And again, I do, you know, we rely on this group to give that expertise feedback. It is different. Some of those elements I can see, and some of those elements may be harder to kind of identify or explain why they can't be possible. I think that's what I'm going to be looking for when I, you know, when I make my findings, right? Is what elements are you able to incorporate? If you cannot do that, why can't you? And, you know, I think that's kind of where we're going to go with our review and recommend decision.
And maybe just a procedural question, because I haven't been on the commission very long, so but it seems to me that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but our more to kind of provide some conceptual directional kind of input to the project and not do a detailed architectural level design review. That's really more of the staff level function. And, you know, but having said that, I think some of the points raised by the chair are certainly important for staff to look at when they do that detailed architectural level design review. And it seems that those issues are really fine tuning of this existing design. You know, because there are vertical window elements in the design now. So it's a matter of degree, it's a matter of you know, is there enough? You know, we're getting to the, you know, issues like, you know, is the depth of the recess sufficient? I mean, and those aren't things commission is I think typically would get involved in, unless I'm mistaken. But I think those are more staff level determinations with the project architect. And I think if we identify, like, the staff to focus on those issues in their review and try to fine tune those so that they're closer in substantial conformance with the overlay requirements, then I think that would be great.
Appreciate the comments, Commissioner Foote, please.
John, could I weigh in for a moment, please?
Go ahead, Andy.
Jackie, could you turn back to those original two black and white pictures that were on the page, one that was in the snowstorm and one that was below, the one before that. There you go. What I wanted to comment on is that the proposal we're listening to, the modified proposal, is at least the fourth iteration of this building's life. The building we're looking at on the left in the snowstorm, that's the former State Theater. No one's even mentioned that use. In fact, in one previous meeting, we heard how the backstage area, the dressing rooms, the proscenium, those theatrical elements are still in place. Then we look to the picture on the right, and that's a second iteration of this space, and it's clearly for commercial use and retail. And Jackie, could you put it forth to the Hoffman's clothing store? So then on the right here, we see what's been regarded as the Day Hilborn modification of 1948, in which the building has been substantially changed from either its iteration as a movie theater, vaudeville house, and now it's a clothing store. Then if we look at the picture on the left, we see yet a fourth iteration of this building when it was Spanky's Apparel. And now we're in a position where we're considering whether or not to approve this more recent modification. And Jackie, if you'll give the applicant's view. And so here we have a fifth look. And I propose that the look of this building has changed substantially at each step in its long life, from State Theater to commercial building to Hoffman's clothing to Spanky's consignment store, and now a new life. And so my question is, since we haven't really paid homage to the intermediary steps, and this building is not on the register, how is this so inappropriate when the building has undergone so many monumental changes in the past 80 years? And that's all.
If I can comment just a moment, this is Don. Andy, thank you for that history lesson. I guess instead of dwelling on the details and taking apart the code and looking for something wrong with each element of it, I've stepped back and take a holistic look and say, boy, if I owned this building and I wanted to turn it into something attractive that I could rent out and make money on as an owner investor, this would be an improvement that would be attractive to the community. And I'm sorry, Sean, I think more, to me, it's more of a holistic view that this is a nice building. It's an improvement for the area. And I don't see why we should question the judgment of the architect and the builder and the owner on what is necessary and practical. And as Andy points out, we're nowhere near the way the building was constructed initially anyway. So I have no problem with this design, regardless of the peculiarities of individual elements of the code.
Now, I think one of the parts of my comments, whatever design ends up here really doesn't have to look like any of the former designs. You know, there's no reason that it has to. If the designer wants to make that choice and actually restore a previous, you know, version of this exterior, that's one of the options that's available to them. But the code doesn't require that. You don't have to only do restorations. Alterations are allowable. I think one of the really important pieces here is that the code criteria that we have in the overlay code are the same criteria that protect all of the buildings. So all of the buildings, regardless of how important they are protected by the same set of requirements. And so when those requirements don't get enforced in situations like this, where it's an unremarkable building, it actually becomes much more difficult to enforce them on the important buildings. And in fact, if the city doesn't enforce them with consistency, it opens decisions on the more important buildings that might prevent really deleterious change from being enforced. So it's really important that the code requirements as written do get consistently and legitimately enforced on all the buildings. And if there's a problem, and we've actually brought this up before, if the requirements aren't right, then you change them. You don't just not enforce them. That's a good way to put this, all the protections for this entire district in danger. And we've seen around the country where ordinances and protections like this are lost because that happens. Don, I totally agree with you. This is the design that they're putting forward is way better than what's there right now. And I think that probably most of the public would like it. And, you know, it returns it to economic vitality, which is a really important thing, you know, especially in our historic downtown. But, you know, the reality is that the requirements for the district are the requirements for the district. And those protections are for all the buildings. And if those protections aren't followed, then there's a good chance that they're not going to protect important buildings later. And we're already seeing this with the designs coming through that obviously didn't even look at the code before they made their design. And so, you know, there are requirements, and then we see a post hoc justification for how they meet the requirements that's pretty thin. And that is not a healthy situation for our Heritage District to be in. Do we have any further discussion? So hearing none, we do need to make a motion.
Greg? Sorry. Yeah, I just have a question about how we handle these types of advisory situations. Has it been the practice of the commission to just forward all of the commissioner's comments to the city and the applicant? Or is there some type of motion made that only picks some of the comments and those are voted on? Or, you know, how does that work?
So we have been inconsistent about this in the past, which is actually a problem. We have been advised by, well, county council that we should be giving our feedback to the city in the form of a findings that we take a vote on. And of course, all of this is part of our entire discussion is part of the public record for the city to consider.
Yeah, I can completely see that when it's an item that we need to, take a regulatory action on. But it seems like this is one where the process would benefit from all of the commissioner's comments being forwarded on and provided to the city and to the applicant. I just don't know what the most appropriate method is that. I mean, we could treat this like a study session, and the comments are the comments, and everybody just moves on without a vote of any kind, or we can try to vote on individual comments, but that seems a little bit of overkill for this situation.
So Mark, this might be a good time for guidance from you.
Yeah, hey guys, I might be able to weigh in. Sorry to interrupt, Mark.
Thanks, Jason.
Yeah. Sean, I know going back to some time ago when we kind of had this dilemma with the first version of phase one of the Academy site, we kind of belabored this point for a long time. And what we settled on was you would kind of take all of your comments and put them into a written document and provide those to us. I don't believe it included a recommendation. I just think it was a summary of all of the comments. And then we took those and used those to move forward with making our decision. Maybe that approach works for this as well. To Greg's point, having a summary of all the comments for the record to help guide staff in making our decisions and looking at the findings, I think would be really beneficial. And it's certainly up to you if you want to make a motion. I don't think it matters one way or the other if that's what you want to do. But if you feel comfortable doing that for the purposes of the record, I would say then go ahead and do that.
So city staff already have, we'll have a summary of our comments from the meeting minutes. So based on what Jason said, it sounds like the best thing for us would be then to just, there is an opportunity for a motion if anyone would like to make one.
Well, this is Michelle. Maybe I will take a stab at it. And we'll see where people want to go, but maybe we could say that we would approve this preliminary design for the building, but we would ask city staff to take a special care in following the overlay, the district overlay requirements as it pertains to the windows on the building and the cornices on the building, and make sure that those two aspects try to follow the code language as closely as possible.
Do we have a second for Michelle's motion? We need a second to discuss it.
It's Andy. I'll second that. So Michelle, do we understand your motion be that you want to be a strict constructionist when it comes to, as Sean says, enforcing the code provisions pertaining to the historic overlay district?
I guess what I'm saying in that is that there are code provisions out there, and that we would, you know, we would ask Mark when he does the final approval on the design that he takes that code and hopefully asks the applicant to follow the code as closely as possible, but we give him some leeway in his ability to do that.
I think that's about as much as we can really reasonably ask for.
Yeah, I would just like to add that as long as all of our comments are forwarded on to the city and to the applicant, I think that's the first priority. And that if we would like to reiterate to the staff that they take particular time to focus on the elements that the chair identified when they do their detailed design review, I think that's a good reminder for staff to take a look at that. But I don't think we necessarily have to say we're approving anything tonight. They're not really asking us to do that. So I don't think we have to say approval in the motion. And I don't think we have to say follow the code, because that's staff's job to interpret and to implement. And they're, of course, going to follow the code. So I guess I'm kind of, you know, those are the concerns that I have with the motion.
Yeah, our role isn't to approve or deny. We would, if at most, we would make a formal recommendation to the city. And so if we wanted to make, you know, recommend that it be approved, you know, with caveats, then we could certainly do that. I'd be in favor of just, and actually I can do this as, and I would do it as a friendly amendment, depending on what people think, of just, you know, saying here, please pay attention. You know, we've offered all of our feet. We offered feedback during the meeting. Please pay. And we wanted to highlight, you know, certain elements for your review. And I think the windows and cornice are two that I identified, and Michelle did as well. And, you know, just stay out of recommending either approval or denial in this case.
So, you know, so should I restate my proposed motion?
You can restate, or I can offer a friendly amendment.
Okay, so basically what you just said, it sounds like fun, which sounds good.
And I can make it, I can do it formally. So okay. I'd like to offer a formal amendment that we not recommend approval or denial of the application, but that we ask the city to pay special attention to the code requirements in regard to the requirements for alteration, including the cornice and the windows. And Michelle, if you accept that, then that becomes the motion.
Okay, I would accept that.
And just for clarification, that also includes forwarding all of our comments.
It does. So any discussion on the amended motion? All right, then we will bring it to a vote. And I will start with, so all those in favor of the motion, Don?
Aye.
Greg?
Yes.
Michelle?
Yes.
Andy?
Aye.
Feli?
Yes.
And I vote in favor as well. So Jackie, we have, it passes unanimously. We are forwarding our comments to city staff and recommending that they pay special attention to the requirements in the code, particularly in regards to the cornice and the windows. So we can now move on to our next agenda item. So we have committee updates announcements. So we'll start with the, and hopefully we can go through this quickly, the SEPA Academy Committee. Has there been any movement on that?
Still no action on that, for sure.
All right. And the Vancouver Heritage Overlay Code Committee, I'm on that one. So I'll say that unless Andy has something to add, we haven't had any movement on that one either. And then our third one is the Underrepresented Communities Committee. Is there an update from you?
Yes. So I sent out an email to the subcommittee members asking for a little bit of input on how best they would want to initiate a dialogue. I really took a couple weeks to try to think of what the big picture is with the cultures, the Native tribes of the Pacific Northwest. And I think that a simple dialogue can't be initiated without looking at the big picture. And that's just kind of how I am. So I need a little more input from my commissioners before I feel confident about creating a POA on how to initiate dialogue with the Native tribes. But I made some great headway with the NAACP. I got the names and contact info of the members for the Vancouver chapter. And I signed up to attend a virtual meeting on the 27th of this month to make a formal introduction. So hopefully sometime before then I can get with Julie and with Andy and definitely Jackie and kind of try to see what exactly we would like to ask, what exactly we can offer as a point of reference for them and just kind of just start initiating a consistent dialogue on what's happening with both of those communities.
All right, thank you, Feli. So now we will move on to old business and updates. We'll start with the 2022 CLG grant decision. Jackie, can you start that conversation for us?
Sure, yes. So last month we talked about that the application period is open for the annual CLG grant. Had a couple proposed ideas that came up at last month's meeting, which were projects that have been discussed by the commission. One is the unreinforced masonry project, that a grant proposal was drafted. It was that one and the one for mid-century modern, and we went with that one for last year. So the unreinforced masonry project. I think I gave you all a little bit of information about that one. And then the second one is the intangible cultural resources collection, and providing information about that, the idea of what that was, kind of like a register, but called a collection that the commission or the county would maintain. There's a little bit of difference where the committee at that time that put together that, I think, was came to the conclusion that it might be better statewide, because of there's no boundaries with those kinds of collections. So I wasn't sure if we were, you know, if this was the exact proposal or if that committee group wanted to kind of talk about that more. But those are the two that we have as potential possibilities to submit for. And I didn't hear any other proposals come to me. So that's kind of where we are. As I mentioned, we've hired a new planner, and I will hopefully be having him join us, but it will take some time to get ramped up. So I still will need support and help with these projects if we get awarded, and even with the application process and period. And then also I just wanted to add with the unreinforced masonry, I'm going to suggest that we chat with and have meeting with the building officials, just to kind of get them up to speed on what the commission is thinking before we apply, so that we're all on the same page. So I just wanted to put that one out as well. So anyways, I'll open it up. Sean, I don't know how you want to handle this discussion, but those are the two we have.
Okay. I think. Well, let's just open it up to discussion.
So I guess this is Dawn. From my perspective, I think we did run into challenges on can't remember the exact name now.
Intangible cultural resources.
Intangible cultural resources. Yeah, intangible got away from me there. Whereas unreinforced masonry, it seems to me, is something that is easier for us to get our arms around, and certainly seems to be important in the Vancouver and Clark County area. So I would tend to think that that might be a better one for us to pursue at this point in time. It seems we have a better handle on what it might mean to the community as a whole. So that would just be my thoughts on that.
I think that's, I really want to move the intangible heritage topic along, but I'm concerned about it, the actual project part of this that we'd be applying for a grant for. It feels like it's a little nebulous at this time. And if Jackie's already short on time to be putting something together, I worry about our ability to get it together, unless there's a commissioner who's really able to help on that, both give it a little bit more form and get a grant application put together.
I just have a question mainly for Jackie. And I may be misremembering this, but when we received the presentation from the consultants on the mid-century modern survey list at our prior meeting, am I remembering right that the scope of their current effort really is just a drop in the bucket in comparison to the potential resources that are out there for them to survey? And if that's true, then would it make any sense to perhaps target the 2022 grant to supplement century survey work to capture more of what we're missing out on
the survey properties? I think what they were working with was a list of properties in the county With a simple kind of filter with our assessor database on built dates. So we had a gigantic, enormous list of buildings that were built during the period that they were filtering. And so what they've been working on is working with the cities and others to narrow that down to really understand on the ground where what significant buildings there are, because although they were maybe built during that time, doesn't make them under that mid-century modern. And Sean, please pipe in if I'm misunderstanding this, but I think we were concerned that we may not even, we put in for 40 to 50 to be surveyed, and there was concern that we might not be able to even meet that, find that many. And I will, I have this on the agenda. So, I sent you all the kind of the list that the consultants have so far, which I think was about 20. It's their first initial list. And Michael Hauser has reviewed it too, and he's come up with some more and thinks that there's more, but it's my understanding that we don't think that there's tons. So I don't know, Sean, if you kind of have a little bit more information or knowledge on that than I do. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that you've got it right. There are a lot of buildings from the time period, even if you use a more narrowed time period, but there are a very small collection of actual mid-century modern buildings. And I know that Brad Richardson at the museum even gave them like a few buildings that are gone that they might consider because there were so few to pull from.
So it sounds like that effort is adequately funded then at this point, in your opinion?
It seems like it now, and I think, it's still ongoing. They're still working on it. And so I'm leery to like say for sure either way, but this is an annual grant opportunity. So it's not that we wouldn't be able to work on that in a future year as well. As well as some other, the historical promotion grant that the county has. So there's other opportunities that we could use if we felt that there was more work to be done on that and not necessarily losing an opportunity for 21.
Thank you.
Or 22, sorry.
I think one of the other things with the unreinforced masonry is that we already do have part of a grant application written. And one of the reasons that we tabled it before was because partway through that writing process, we discovered some new information that changed what the grant application would need to look like. Turned out that there was an unreinforced masonry survey that had been done. And that was part of the original idea, was that we would survey what's in Clark County. But there was a statewide survey that was pretty good that was done. So that meant that the application needed to change to focus more on, okay, we've got these buildings. What as a county can we do to deal with them in terms of policy incentives, regulations, that sort of thing. So it does need to be modified. The grant application that we have is not done. It's not complete, but it's at least started. So Jackie, you do need a formal decision from us, right, to be able to proceed on a concept?
Yeah, typically you have a vote of the project that you want to proceed with application.
All right, so hearing no other discussion, I'll be open to a motion for a decision. I'll entertain it, that's the term.
Well, this is Don. I'll move that we direct Jackie to proceed with a application for unreinforced masonry grant, as we need to modify it, obviously, for your direction or your suggestion. So.
And this is Greg. I'll second.
All right. Any discussion of the motion? And let's go ahead and take a vote. We'll try just doing an audible. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right, Jackie. Since I helped with the original URM grant application, I'm happy to help with this. Is there anyone else who is willing or able to help with the application? Your silence is overwhelming.
No,
Greg.
I can help you look at it, edit it, whatever, you know, whatever you think I can help with.
That can be very useful. Thank you. So Jackie, Greg, and I will give you a hand, and hopefully the Head Start will keep the load from being too much for you.
Okay, so how about I start with sending out what we have? Okay. You guys can give me some comments on that. And then, like I said, I'd really want to, before we apply for anything, check in with the cities. I don't want to get ahead of them on what we're applying for. And kind of get, you know, just everyone on the same page. So if you all could help with that as well to join that, I'll set it up. I'll set them up, but I'll have to maybe get some help on it. Would it be every city, or do you think it's probably going to be most? I guess we have to kind of talk about that. Do we need to check in with each one, or specifically Vancouver and Camas and Washougal, or all of them? So more to come.
All right.
Okay.
So our next item, and I want to be cognizant of the time, we are at 7:47. So we did get the Mid-Century Modern survey list sent to the group. And I think, Jackie, have you gotten any comments on that?
No, I just wanted to share Michael's. I haven't gotten any from the commission, but just to kind of share what Michael Hauser from the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation, his biggest concern was resurveying resources that have already been surveyed. So we had a lot, I think, on that, that we have a lot on that initial list, unless the properties have changed drastically. So he doesn't think we're going to gain much knowledge other than updating like images and whatnot. He's hoping that we focus on new sites and get some buzz going around unrecorded mid-century resources in Vancouver and the county. And he thinks there's a lots of potential there. And he brought up, don't forget homes, don't forget residential. So that was his comments. He added some to the list and sent that back to the consultant team. And so that's kind of where he was. So I just wanted to keep everyone posted on that. He's a good resource to know that kind of stuff, as being from Vancouver and kind of studying that those architects of that era. So that's where we are.
Well, and this is a context statement. It's not just a survey. So we should be getting, even if they've been surveyed before, we should be getting what they mean to Clark County and not just, hey, look at this mid-century modern building.
True.
If our list is short, I think one of the things that I would like to see is we have a few typologies in Clark County rather than specific buildings, that if we need to fill up the number, I think that would be a great way to do it. You know, we have the World War II cottage, speaking of residential, you know, we've got the Prairie Ranch, which there are quite a few of, but you know, these are two residential styles that really get to, while not specifically mid-century modern, they get to the period that we identified in the RFP of just mid-century trends. And then I think there's also, if you look along Evergreen and Uptown Village, there's we see some commercial trends of the kind of the classic Main Street storefront being adapted based on the mid, again, not mid-century modern, but mid-century technological and architectural trends, including really on Evergreen, they've got these really interesting L buildings that show early attempts to accommodate car traffic into a Main Street type. So there may be others, but looking at a typology with some examples of them, even though those examples may not be individually significant, could be a good way for us, especially since we're looking for that context statement, what this means for our county.
All right, thank you.
And, you know, if any of the commissioners have anything further, just send it to Jackie. This is an ongoing project.
Yep.
All right, unless there's any other comment on that, we can move to new business and try to go through it quickly. Although, first, the last one, I don't know. So, budget.
Okay, we'll try to get through this quickly. As I mentioned, I think in the email, the city provides an outreach budget for the commission, and it's a two-year budget. So this will be the first year of the 2 years, and it's $10,000 a year. And we typically use it for memberships to support local historic preservation or historic museums as members. And we also typically provide funding and support sponsorship to the Clark County Historical Museum lecture series, which we participate in as well. We've had commission members introduce some of those lectures and talk about the program and whatnot. So the museum had submitted a request in the fall for this year's in the amount of $2,000. So for just today, just to kind of move things, some of these things forward, I was hoping for a decision on perhaps just the memberships renewals for the ones that we've been supporting, if you also choose, and then a decision on the museum's lecture series sponsorship. And then some of these other things, the conferences, the trainings, there aren't any details specific out yet, so I would bring them to you when those registration periods come up to discuss and make decisions around those. So those things in highlighted yellow are the ones that I'm suggesting or proposing if you guys could decide tonight.
So then, Jackie, the subtotal is not actually $6,229, right?
No, that's everything. I'm sorry. So let's see.
Just recalculating, I was like, not
bad. So you need our formal approval, Jackie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I move we approve the expenditures highlighted in yellow.
Second.
All right. Any discussion of the motion? All right, let's go ahead and take a vote. Since this is a budget one, we'll go one by one on it. So if you are in favor, say yes or aye. Andy?
Aye.
Feli? Was that an aye?
Aye, yes, sir.
All right. Sorry, a little garbled at the beginning, want to be sure. Greg?
Yes.
Yeah.
Don?
Aye.
Michelle?
Yes.
And I am abstaining, is that the right word? Two of the line items are for the Clark County Historical Museum, where I am on the Board of Trustees, so I'll be abstaining from voting on this. So, Jackie, you have 5 in favor and 1 abstain and 1 absent. The motion passes.
Great, thank you. Okay.
And our last item is the School for the Blind. We've been given an opportunity to comment on the proposed project. It came before us before, so some of our new commission members may not remember a proposal for some fairly substantial demolition and redevelopment of the School of the Blind site. Right? Do I have that one right, Jackie?
I think that was the School for the Deaf.
That's School of the Deaf. I apologize.
That's all right. So this one is on the National Register of Historic Places. It's from what I understand, a building that is not a contributing resource to the historic campus. So it was not identified in the nomination as significant and contributing. So they are doing some new construction there for the student population and the work that they do there. And this building there is proposed to be demolished for a new structure. And I think the city, in response to hearing from the commission and wanting to know about demolition, especially at historic sites, even if it's not something that's on our local register, wanted to make sure that the applicant reached out to you to see if there was any comments or feedback that would be part of, that would be put into their packet for review, the land use review for the new building and the demolition of this one. I tried to get a Google shot of this. So here it is, the Alston building. I think we have a letter from DAP that was part of that packet. So you have that as also part of your information. So yeah, I'll open it up to any questions or comments or anything you would like to forward on to the city or the applicant.
So Jackie sent the letter around earlier this month, and that's pretty much all the information that we have.
Yeah.
So our options are to comment or not to comment. And if we do want to comment, we would need to either authorize a working group to write out that comment, or we would need to say what the content of that comment is.
What is our statutory authority in this one? Is this advisory only?
This is pretty much a courtesy review. Yeah, so I think the city wants to make sure that the commission is, I believe, aware of any demolitions that are occurring on buildings that wouldn't be flagged and brought before you per code. Because this is on the National Register, there's no code requirements for changes to National Register properties, only Clark County Heritage Register properties, and then something specific in the Vancouver Heritage Overlay. So this is just an opportunity to provide some comments.
Thank you.
So I'm not hearing any discussion. When I reviewed it, I didn't see anything that stuck out that made sense for us to comment on. You know, our role is completely non-regulatory. We can make a comment because we are who we are, and that's really all what it comes down to. So if we want to make a comment, we can. I don't see a reason to make a comment if we don't have something to say.
I'm with you, Sean. I see no basis to comment or reason to comment personally.
I will let them know.
Jackie, does that need to be a formal vote? Just want to make sure I'm crossing T's and dotting I's on this. Since we're deciding not to act.
It doesn't hurt.
Well, yeah. Don, you were about to say.
This is Don. I'll move that we make no comments on this particular action.
Andy, I second this motion.
All right. I'll give an opportunity for discussion of the motion. Let's make it quick. All right. So let's see if we can do this audibly. All in favor, say aye.
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 And any opposed? All right, Jackie, it's unanimous. We're not going to say anything.
Okay.
All right, seeing no further items on our agenda and seeing the clock at 8 o'clock, we are through our agenda and this meeting is now adjourned. Thank you, everyone. And thank you for going through the last few items quickly and respecting people's time.
Thanks, everybody.
Always a pleasure, team.
Good night.